Now, when you walk into the ring with the number one heavyweight of the world, you'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Truckers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trucker died and only three were wounded. Now your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Good evening, folks. I am Jacob Tyler. I am normally just a co-host here on Blood River Radio, but it's my great honor tonight to be filling in for Eddie Miller, who is otherwise engaged in some charitable endeavors that he is heavily involved in. We're also here tonight with Ike Baker, who is going to be co-hosting with me this evening. And we have a real exciting show planned for you guys. And we think you're really going to enjoy it. Before we get too much further along here, though, let's open up in prayer. And Ike, would you like to open us up in prayer tonight?
Sure. I'll do that, Jacob. Heavenly Father, we ask your blessing on this endeavor, as in all things. We ask that you be with us. We ask that you protect our cause. We ask that you keep us in the fold of righteousness. Lord, we ask all these things in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Ike. Well, I think most of you who listen to the show are at least somewhat familiar with me already because of my activity on this show and being involved on at least most of the shows we do every week here. So Ike has been a regular with us as of late as well, but for those who might not have been with us from the beginning, Ike, who might not know you too well yet, would you like to introduce yourself a bit so our listeners have a frame of reference?
Sure. I live in East Kentucky, born and bred here. I'm a member of the League of the South. I've been a member of the League of the South for the last several years. I was fairly quickly appointed as intelligence officer for the state of Kentucky after Charlottesville. Dr. Hill and Chief of Staff Tubbs elevated me to the national staff of the league, and I've been one of Dr. Hill's staff officers ever since. Couldn't be happier to serve him as the chief of our organization, and I couldn't be happier than to serve an organization like the League of the South. As we say, God save the South.
Amen to that. The South has been described more often than not as the breadbasket, if you will, of Christian culture here in the United States, and I take it that that would be a statement that strongly resonates with you.
Absolutely. If you go back to our illustrious 4 years as a free country, there was a great Christian revival that swept the Southern Army in 1862. It runs deep in our region, and not that it doesn't in other places, but this is our home. This is we understand what Christianity has meant to the South since the first rock-ribbed Presbyterian Scots-Irish found their way through the Alleghenies into these Southern mountains where I live now. So, they call us the Bible Belt in the popular culture. I tend to think I live about on the belt buckle of the Bible Belt.
Yeah, same here. This whole region we're in, I've heard it referred to that as that very thing on more than one occasion, the buckle of the Bible Belt. Now, the League of the South is a rather fine organization. I've had some involvement with quite a few of its members. Of course, you and I have become friends over the past few years. I've had the great pleasure of becoming better friends with Dr. Hill as well. And of course, we were all at Charlottesville together, and yes, that was quite an experience. That's almost a whole another story for another show. We could probably fill a couple hours of time just recounting all of the craziness that we bore witness to on that day.
You know, I'd be more than willing to do that. I'd be more than willing to bring my perspective of that day to the show sometime. time, Jacob?
There's so much, not even just misinformation, I mean outright disinformation that was being spread around in the immediate aftermath. And of course, you know, we could, it was pretty plain to see that in many ways it was a setup, but all kinds of accusations fly, and a great many of them seem to come from people that, by my reckoning, didn't spend too much time talking to the actual people who were involved in organizing the event. And, I did an article, of course, on the event for American Free Press. I was there embedded with the League of the South, you know, almost like one of those military journalists that goes overseas to Iraq and one of the wars for the empire or something, and is covering the war from the perspective of a certain military unit they're embedded with. And so that was the capacity in which I was there. And I've, of course, knew a lot of the, or not just knew, I mean, know a lot of the people who are actually involved in organizing. And you guys know even more of those people than I do. I mean, I'm pretty young. So, yeah, it was just, there was so much stuff that was being said about it that was coming from a very uninformed perspective, you know, people from the outside looking in. And so I say that to say that there's a great need to address point blank the misconceptions and the disinformation, and in a lot of cases just more innocent and benign misinformation that's been thrown around about that. So
absolutely,
perhaps that would be something to plan for in the near future. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'd be willing to do that with Dr. Hill's permission and the permission of the league attorneys, because, as you know, there are some of those things still working their way through the legal system. I'd be willing to tell the story of how that formation ended up marching up Market Street that morning, Jacob.
That would be phenomenal. Well, I'll have to talk to Eddie about that, and we'll see.
Sure, I'll talk to Dr. Hill about it. he's the chief of the league. I'm a staff officer.
I hear you. Now, for our first guest tonight, folks, we had planned to bring Paul English onto the show with us. He's a very fascinating fellow. I must confess, I don't know him anywhere near as well as I would like to at this point, but I've been hearing his name for quite a while, and I've been very impressed with what I've seen and heard of him thus far. And Paul, are you here with us yet? Well, I suppose he's still in the process of calling in. So the plan is to for Paul to be joining us tonight, though. In the second hour, we're bringing in the one and only Mike Goodrich, who I think is a name that we don't need to elaborate on too much in our circles, but for the possible uninitiated or for those who have heard the name and might, you know, just instinctively know that the guy's significant, and you know, they're recalling from somewhere, oh yeah, I've heard that name, but they might not remember completely. Mike Goodrich is the author of the book Hellstorm. That's the most famous book that he's probably known for, but the guy's actually a very prolific author and has written a great deal beyond that. And one of his more recent books is going to be the subject of our interview with him tonight. And Ike is actually going to be spearheading that interview. So stay tuned for that in the second hour. That's going to be an exciting time. And I've gotten to know Mike a little bit myself, and he's just a fantastic guy. So we're really excited about that. We're about to be headed into a break, folks. So after these words from some of our sponsors, tune right back in. We'll look forward to talking with you then.
I'd advise Mr. Trump to stop whining and go try to make his case to get votes.
The press has created a rigged system. They even want to try and rig the election.
Well, I tell you what, it helps in Ohio that we got Democrats in charge of the machines.
And poisoned the mind of so many of our voters.
At the polling booths, where so many cities are corrupt and voter fraud is all too common. And then they say, oh, there's no voter fraud in our country.
I come from Chicago. So I want to be honest. It's not as if it's just Republicans who have monkeyed around with elections in the past. Sometimes Democrats have too. You know, whenever people are in power, they have this tendency to try to, you know, tilt things in their direction.
There's no vote.
You start whining before the game's even over. Whenever things are going badly for you and you lose, you start blaming somebody else. And you don't have what it takes to be in this job.
Hi, I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused Border Agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, four grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved four checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999. Text F-I-G-H-T to 444-999 or go to defendapatriot.com. Defendapatriot.com.
What do you wish your parents would do to show you they love you?
Take me to Montana.
That I would have a huge slumber party with all the girls there.
Play with me more often. My mom's so busy with the board meeting.
To spend more time together as a family.
Do more out-of-the-house activities.
This is a tough one.
My parents, they do everything they love me. If it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have a roof over my head.
They don't need to show it to me. I just know they love me.
Well, not yelling at me very much.
What do you wish? What do you wish?
Raise my allowance.
To not argue together.
Have my dad be home more for dinner and stuff so that I could be even closer.
Family, isn't it about time?
Buy me an ice cream and kiss me to love me.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Okay, what's the next question?
Go ahead. Make my day.
All right, folks, we are back from break. We're Ike and I are here and on air with you, and we're just glad to be here and fellowshipping with you folks on radio tonight. And Paul should be calling in just a few minutes, so we're going to be having a good time with that, chatting with him, and he's just he's going to be telling us a bit about his own experience and stuff in the movement, because like I said, both Ike and I don't know him nearly as well as we'd like just yet, but I know for my own part, I've been hearing the guy's name for quite a while, and it's not just happenstantial that we would have him on tonight, because he is actually the guy that has been working with our guest we're going to be having on in the second hour, Mike Goodrich. He has been working with Mike very closely on getting a audiobook produced of Hellstorm, which is a very exciting development. You know, I mean, books are great. I'm a very hardcore proponent of the hard copy. And in the digital age that we live in, I'm all about, hey, why not both? You know, like those old Oreo commercials. So I really don't get why a lot of folks think it's got, ebooks have made hard copy books obsolete. I mean, everyone I talk to who actually reads stuff, whether it's online or anywhere else, doesn't really agree with it, but it's a sentiment you see bandied around a lot. So an audiobook version of a book is always a significant development, and it's something that in my estimation, any author should be working towards doing, because you'll get so many more people, you'll get your message to so many more people in that way. You know, even folks that aren't like, books are too old-fashioned. For me, I don't like those clunky old things. They still might be pressed for time. And an audiobook, you know, people can listen to that on the commute to work or what have you. So very significant that an audiobook version is now available of this. And Paul English is the guy that's helped make that happen for Mike. We'll be having on in the second hour. So
Jacob, having Hellstorm on an audiobook is really significant, because that's a story that needs to be told. I don't believe that there's any widespread knowledge in this country beyond our circles. We're woke, as we call it, J-woke, and woke in many other ways. But not that we can't continue to learn. We can. But this is a story that I don't think the general public has any awareness of at all. You know, after Germany was defeated on the battlefield and surrendered, they were ground by the heel of the victors into the dirt. There was a willful deindustrialization of Germany that took place. There was a willful attempt to starve their population by a 1,200 calorie per day diet. The POWs, lawfully surrendered POWs, were kept in open-air internment camps where untold numbers died of exposure, starvation, disease, et cetera, et cetera. Those were the true concentration camps of the Second World War. And the greatest generation should hang their heads. Now, I don't really mean the common soldier. I serve the empire myself. I'm not blameless here. Lots of good men serve the empire. But lots of supposedly good men did their best to murder Germany after the Second World War.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, I mean, you know, there's all that research that's been done on the camps and Auschwitz and Treblinka and all these places. I remember the Barnes Review. They did a really fascinating issue that was devoted almost entirely to all this scholarly research that had been done into those camps. And there's very serious questions raised about whether or not there was ever any such thing in Germany as a homicidal death camp. There were certainly concentration camps, and people were certainly rounded up and deported and put in these camps. And in the latter part of the war, certainly a great many people died horrible deaths in those camps. Mm-hmm. But the notion that these camps were ever homicidal in any way, shape, or form is very much hotly debated by academics.
I'll be candid, Jacob. I don't believe that they were, frankly. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that they were death camps, quote unquote. Not to make light, but we do make light sometimes. I heard a very humorous remark. It said that these weren't death camps; these were work camps, and Jews hate work so bad they thought they were dying.
Well, hey, it's another show, you know.
You know, but no, I don't believe that they were death camps, extermination camps, as they call them. There's an excommunicated Catholic bishop, Richard Williamson. You've heard of him, I'm certain. He's very, very scholarly on the whole topic, and he's a very sober-minded man. I mean, he's what you think of when you think of a pre-1964 Catholic bishop, okay?
That old order of Catholic.
Yeah. I have no idea whether he's a Jesuit or exactly where he comes from in Catholicism, but Richard Williamson lays it right out, and he actually says that the religion of today is not Christianity, it's the Holocaust. There's one thing in this culture that you can't even question. You can't make light of it. You can't try to shed doubt on it or anything. That's the Holocaust. They can take a crucifix, a quote-unquote artist can take a crucifix of our Lord and put it in a jar of urine, call it Piss Christ, and that's art. Do anything with a Talmud or a Torah. Well, you saw what we did with a Talmud last fall. That made quite a few waves. I don't believe they were death camps. I believe they were work camps. I happen to agree with what it seemed like the thought you were putting forth. I know there is a lot of scholarly debate, but for me individually, I don't know if I've ever believed in the story of the quote unquote Holocaust, frankly.
Well, and even if you're inclined to believe it, when you really look into the lore, so to speak, the claims made by people like Elie Wiesel in his infamous book *Night*, and what was that other guy, Abraham Bamba? I think he's another famous one that wrote a book. Mm-hmm. And when you really just start looking at the survivor accounts, it's just, pardon my usage of the word, for anyone who might be listening who is not convinced of the things we're talking about already. You know, this is not meant to be an insensitive thing per se, but it's comically over the top is when you actually look at so many of these accounts. And so even if you're inclined to think, oh yeah, I mean, the Nazis were definitely trying to genocide people, just, you know, you read the actual accounts from people who supposedly survived these death camps, and it's absurd, physically impossible in a great many cases. And even the confessions, quote unquote, of a lot of the Nazi officers and everything who were tried at Nuremberg, when you actually look at the confessions they made, a bunch of these confessions are literally impossible. Making a confession, all right, but what they're confessing to it's not physically possible.
And it's coming to light, Jacob, that a lot of these confessions were made under literally medieval torture. Mm. You know, they would crush their testicles Okay, I'll tell you whatever whatever you want to know if you crush my boys. Okay,
right.
Probably, and we all have a breaking point. That seems like it might be one for most men, but they brutalized them in every way that they could, and they extracted confessions from them. And it's also coming to light that a lot of these interrogators were Jews in uniform. You know, so
yeah, absolutely.
You know, I didn't come around to being woke the way most folks did myself. I was raised in a family where we were taught who the Jew is from the very beginning. I never had any deception to get over with those folks. I wasn't raised CI, but I was certainly raised under the dual seed bloodline, and I've considered the Jews to be the offspring of Satan since I was old enough to know that they were different than us, Jacob. So. Mm. I never had an indoctrination with Schofield lies and dispensationalism to have to get over. I never had that. And so I've always looked at those people differently. And as I went into adulthood and started making observations, started noticing things, as we say, these things that are out there to be noticed are indisputable. You know, our conversation with... We're at the post.
Yeah, hold that thought for just a moment. That's the music for the break coming in there. And when we come back, Paul should be joining us anytime now. And we'll be right back after these messages.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with Rick Vincent.
A tug pushing two barges collided with a 755-foot oil tanker in the Houston Ship Channel, capsizing one barge and damaging the other one. Coast Guard Captain Kevin Odit says the top priority is public safety.
We've been conducting air monitoring from the beginning, from the onset of this incident. Port of Houston Authority fire boats were the first vessels on scene, and they assessed the situation. They began air monitoring immediately.
It's not known how much of the 25,000 barrels of gasoline loaded onto each barge might have leaked. Vice President Mike Pence delivers the commencement speech at Liberty University. Pence says attacks against the right to freedom of religion should not be tolerated.
The freedom of religion is enshrined in our First Amendment and in the hearts of every American. And these attacks on Christian education are un-American.
President Trump delivered the commencement speech in 2017. You're listening to USA Radio News.
With Amazon Music, a voice is all you need.
Won't you stop your crying? I know that you're trying. Everything's gonna be okay.
Alexa, play Maren Morris.
Okay.
Get unlimited access to over 50 million songs. Download the Amazon Music app today.
At Indeed, we believe a resume is a great way to see an overview of a candidate. But you're not hiring a resume. You're hiring a person. That's why Indeed offers tools that help bridge the gap between a candidate and the resume. Like skill tests, which let you actually see a candidate's abilities in action to make sure they're a good fit for the job. See beyond the resume with Indeed. Experience Indeed for yourself today and get a free sponsored job upgrade on your first posting at Indeed.com/promo. Terms and conditions apply.
President Trump's 25% tariff on auto imports could hike the cost of an imported car by as much as $3,700. Rebecca Walzer, president of Walzer Wealth Management on Fox News, asked how long it'll take for the trade standoff with China to hit American businesses.
It'll start to affect people within less than, 4 months, so it will be even less than a quarter. And certainly Americans it might take a little bit of time for Americans to feel it in the wallets, because it does get passed down as kind of a cycle or getting passed down by the business. The bigger issue question is if we don't get a deal, we're looking at a 25% or greater stock market problem.
Gunmen stormed a five-star hotel in Pakistan's port city of Gwadar, killing at least one person. Three armed men killed a security guard as they attempted to enter the Pearl Continental Hotel. The man suspected of killing his mother, father, uncle, and four other people in rural Tennessee last month was arrested and charged after being released from the hospital. Investigators say Michael Cummins was charged with six counts of first-degree murder, one count of criminal homicide, and one count of attempt to commit first-degree murder. This is USA Radio News.
Being this is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Now, to you folks, we are back after our break. Ike and I are here on the radio with you tonight, and Paul English has joined us, so we'll be chatting with him in just a moment here. And, as we were saying, both Ike and I admittedly do not know Paul too well just yet, but I've been hearing of Paul for quite a while now. And suffice it to say, folks, Paul is an indefatigable warrior for truth. I don't know exactly how long he's been in the movement. He's going to be telling us all about himself pretty shortly here. But I just wanted to give you some kind of a frame of reference here. Even though I don't know this guy very well yet, I feel like I've known him in many ways already. And we're just excited to have him on tonight. So, Paul, are you here with us?
I'm with you, Jacob. Yeah, good to be with you. And Ike, yes? Got the names right, have I?
That's right, Paul. Good to meet you.
Great. Yeah, good to meet you guys, too.
Yeah, glad to be on air with you. And Ike, are you here with us, too?
I am. I'm on the air.
All right, excellent. Was there anything you wanted to say before
No, now that we've got Paul on the air, I think we can leave that conversation we were having alone. I was just going to reference a conversation that Pastor Thomas Robb and I had on this very program several weeks ago about our friend the Jays, but that can hold till another time.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, there's a lot to talk about there. And for the uninitiated, I mean, we were touching on some pretty heavy stuff there. Suffice it to say, there's a great deal of research on all of that. And if any of that was shocking to any of you who are listening before then, just Google some of those terms we were using there. I mean, there's a literal mountain of research about it. So at any rate, that's a lot to go on to talk about, and we'll hopefully do that more as time permits, you know, in another show. But we are here on the air now tonight with Paul English, and we're just thrilled to have you on. Paul, like Ike and I were saying earlier, I mean, I've been hearing your name for a while. I'm sure Ike has too. Mm-hmm. And I've been impressed with what I've heard. But admittedly, neither one of us really know you anywhere near as well as we would like. And we're hoping to remedy that some tonight and also just give our audience a proper introduction to you. So what we were wanting to do here was just give you some time to talk about yourself and what you do in the movement and, you know, perhaps some of your current projects and stuff like that. That's just an overview. You don't have to do all that right now. Maybe we could just start, though, with you introducing yourself and telling us a little bit about what you do and your background.
Yeah, sure. Hey, this is a surprise, by the way. It's a nice surprise. No one's ever asked me this for a long time. And, of course, I could go on for days. The show's only a couple of hours, isn't it? It's very long, isn't it?
Okay. It is,
a dreadful
unfortunately.
Question
yes.
for you to ask. Because stand
our audience
back,
maybe
here
believes
we go.
It's only a couple hours, but for us, it's unfortunate.
6 hours later. And that's how it all worked out, so it's always good. In the recent period, the last 4 or 5 years, I've been involved in really fiddling around, if that's the right word, with putting radio stations and things together online and really looking at that. So the bit of work I've been closely associated with is eurofolkradio.com. I've been doing quite a bit of work there. And then through that, all sorts of other connections have built up. And obviously, your guest or our guest, I don't know quite how this is, because it's all quite interesting tonight. I've been slightly thrown off balance. What I was expecting was I thought, well, I'm going to get a call at some point, and then it's all slightly different. But I'm finding it quite entertaining. Good. Yeah, it's nice. And I bumped into Tom Goodrich, a couple of years ago, I think, online. And we did a few things last year. So that's kind of like the recent period for me. Like everybody else, I guess, like most of your listeners and yourselves, I read a lot. That's been going on for a long time. The reading's been going on for a long time, maybe 25 years now. So I'm in my late 50s. I'm married. I live in what's left of the remnant of England, and try to carry it with me as best I can. But it's a complete monkey house over here, as you're probably aware. So it's a really idiotic place at the moment. So it's only going to get worse before it gets better. But that's a good thing. And what else could I say? I mean, basically, in the 90s, this is a long story, which I'll keep short. In the 90s, before much of this information was on the internet, about 92, 93, so it's quite a while back now. Good grief, it is a while back. It's nearly 30 years ago. I bumped into a guy in London that I was working with at the time, and he turned out to be the strangest person I think I've ever met in my life. And he was a very scary person in many ways, not physically, but just he was slightly not normal. But he talked about banking. I'm not a banker, by the way, just to put you at ease. I'm actually not a banker.
That is a relief.
It is. And but I was sort of all, you know, fresh-faced and happy with the world in my early 30s. Thought I knew what was going on. I bumped into this guy, and after about 6 months of listening to him and him showing me documents, I realized he knew absolutely nothing, anything much. So by the time we got about 25, my sort of worldview was very, very different by then. And that was the opening of the whole thing. I mean, he effectively just taught me how the global banking system works. So I went, oh, well, there's no point really doing too much if this is how it's rigged and this is how it's set up. And he knew about it because he was involved. So I learned a great deal from him. And that came to a head with me in court. I've got to tell you this, right? With me in court, the highest court in the land, against facing off against the Bank of England for 3 days. And you won't be surprised to hear that they won. Yeah, they really did win. Anyway, that was quite interesting. So that was the end of the last day of the last century. And from that point forward, I've just sort of raised my level of independent research and reading all through the phases, really. And so I know a lot about banking, but I can't be bothered to go over it again because it does put people to sleep. It's the best thing to getting people to fall asleep is banking.
That's probably one reason why the enemy dabbles in banking is because they know it's so painfully boring for us to research all the shenanigans they're up to.
Well, I agree with you, Jacob. Yeah, absolutely right. Because it's I think it's a form of black magic, you see. Most of the things that we're dealing with is a type of black magic in that there's a sort of deception taking place in the dark. And for most of us, the dark is our own minds. And, you know, whenever I'm out, I mean, literally, even now to this day, I'll talk to anybody. I'll say, you went to school. I said, so you left school and you plundered on in the world and everything you've done. At school, did they ever teach you about banking? And they go, no. I said, did they ever teach you anything about the law? No. And I said, it's interesting, isn't it? Those are the two most powerful forces that are going to impinge down upon you. And yet at school, you're taught not a lick. So you realize that you're not taught that, and then history's mal-taught intentionally, and then everything starts to fall apart for those of us that can't stop pulling at the thread. You know, everything literally comes apart. You go, oh, it's a ruse, a very clever ruse.
It's such a phenomenon you're talking about here in the States. I mean, they don't even teach us how to balance a checkbook in school, for crying out loud. Is it that lacking in the old country as well?
Yeah, there's no teaching of it. There's no I mean, because if there were, I mean, it's a bit like if you actually raise students to ask questions, and education establishments don't do that. They don't do that. That's not what they want. They don't want students asking questions all the time. That really gets in the way of getting them indoctrinated. Mm-hmm. What you want them is absorbing garbage. So, but if you were to have lessons on banking and allow the class to start asking questions, the whole thing would unravel inside a month. I mean, people be going, you know, because I say to people, do you know where money comes from? These are really basic things. And they go, it comes from the bank. I go, yeah, but where does the bank get it from? And of course, then they start to hit very quickly. And I'm not mocking. It's totally understandable. People hit limitations in what they understand about the nature of that. When you then find out that every single war is really a banker's war, which it is, that's it's right. All about economic plunder. It's just an advanced form of plundering.
That's right.
See the connection in all of it. Yeah. Then you want to look at National Socialism and you go, that's very interesting how he took 7 million people out of work and got, you know, 6 million of them back to work in 2 years. How did he do that? And then you find out that he didn't bother using the banks. So all of these things, they're layered and they all reveal, you know, the similar sort of operations behind the whole thing. So it just opens out, it seems. It's like a domino effect. You pull one bit. Some people, I've started from banking, some start from health aspect. They look at the manipulation of health. Others in media, political lying, which of course is the same thing, and so on and so forth. So, yeah, my background is from banking, bizarrely, but there you go.
As fitting an introduction to the calls that animates this as anything. So from all of this, I'm getting that you're very much a behind-the-scenes kind of guy. And folks, you know, if it's not obvious to you already, for every Eddie the Bombardier Miller, for every Ike Baker, for every Michael Hill, and every great leader of any organization, any dynamic speaker out there, there's a Paul English behind the scenes, at least one who is putting stuff together for them and organizing their presence online and making things happen for them. So I'm very much getting out of what you're saying, Paul, that this is a large part of the work you do. But when we come back from break, we'd love to get you to comment some more and tell us about anything else you're working on right now, and that audio book that you've been working on with Tom Goodrich, The Adaptation of Hellstorm. And we'll have all that and more coming up after these messages, folks. So please stay tuned.
I reinstated a policy first put in place by President Ronald Reagan, the Mexico City policy. I strongly supported the House of Representatives' pain-capable bill, which would end painful late-term abortions nationwide. And I call upon the Senate to pass this important law and send it to my desk for signing. We are protecting the sanctity of life and the family as the foundation of our society. And most importantly of all, it is the gift of life itself. That is why we march, that is why we pray, and that is why we declare that America's future will be filled with goodness, peace, joy, dignity, and life for every child of God.
Blood River Radio is the only news media in the United States whose sole purpose of being is to fight against the ever-rising tide of global white genocide, both soft and hard genocide, whether it is in the form of ethnic cleansing via the current massive invasion of non-white, non-Christian hordes that are overwhelming the once all-white nations of Western Europe, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, or via the hard genocide in South Africa, where the rape, murder, and torture of whites is an ongoing daily occurrence. Though we are a Christian brotherhood, we will cooperate with other groups in our operations if it will shorten our people's casualty list. We further pledge to you to leave the radio studio at every opportunity and take it to our churches, to our universities, and most importantly, we promise to occupy the streets. However, none of our mission can succeed without funding. Please help us all that you can and donate to our cause by going to www.bloodriverradio.com.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Hey, I'm just an old chunk of coal, but I'm gonna be a diamond someday.
Well, the old chunk of coal is not with us tonight. We certainly do miss him, but he's very well, very thoroughly engaged in some very worthy endeavors. So I know he misses you folks tonight too, but We're glad to be filling in for him just the same. And we are on radio right now with Paul English, who is a very fascinating fellow. I must say, everything that I had gleaned thus far as an initial impression of Paul has been validated and what he's been saying here. So we're back here with Paul. And right before we went to break, Paul, I think we were going to try to shift a little bit from you talking about your background to I was saying that it sounds like most or a great deal of what you do is behind the scenes kind of stuff. And I was going to ask you when we came back, do you yourself, you know, do any kind of writing, or do you have a show of your own that you broadcast, or is it primarily this sort of behind the scenes stuff right now?
Well, it's been behind the scenes in many ways, simply because these behind the scenes things needed to be sorted out. And I'm also of the view that team building is the key challenge here. I really do think that. I think it's a matter of trying to get, it's very difficult, of course. You've probably experienced it. It's a bit like herding cats in this arena. And everybody can disagree with everybody within a millisecond about things. So it's a bit like, whoa, you know, we've actually got a very, very big problem. It's enormous. Most people, of course, are kith and kin, are blithely unaware of it almost and committed to remaining so. So there's some tremendous communication challenges, I feel. But no, I do get behind the microphone. I'm on with a guy, a chap called Andrew Carrington Hitchcock. I do a once a week spot with him. I think that goes out on Tuesdays. In fact, I know it does. It goes out on Tuesdays.
Oh, and, yeah, we know Andy as well. Yeah, he's a friend of the show.
Yeah. And since I started doing that, I did some shows the other year, but last year was very difficult for me on a personal level. I had to sort of pull away from it. I just ran out of time with everything, and it was not possible for me to do things last year. But that's changing a little bit. So I get little guest spots and turn up on shows like Dennis Fetcher and things like that. And I'm slowly getting to know some of the other personalities, as it were, within the arena. And I do plan on doing things. There's definitely a requirement for something a little bit more, how can I put it? I feel there is anyway. There's a requirement for something quite interactive here in the UK. As you know, we are burdened with this farce called Brexit, and it just rumbles on. And there's a great deal to be said about it, but most people are very angry, and we need some constructive action to actually, you know, get what we've given our instructions about. You know, what people have been given orders around here to do things, and for 3 years they've willfully disobeyed the orders. So we know that we've got a whole slew of people over here who are basically our enemy. There's no other way. I'm not emotive about that. It's just literally the case. Their behavior indicates that their interests do not coincide with ours, even though we are the people that have apparently employed them. So this is, you know, it's like insurrection in the house. The butler and the mayor, they're all revolting, and they won't run the house anymore, and it's getting really out of hand. So there's quite some very serious things to be addressed over here. And it's same on your side of the pond and elsewhere. You know, we're not alone in this. I'm planning to do more behind the microphone. I'm definitely planning to do more of that.
Governments definitely do not serve the will of our people, here or across the water. You know, here in the States, I don't know if you heard the beginning of the show, I'm involved with the League of the South, which is a nationalist organization here in the States. What would be a parallel to that in England, Paul?
You know what? I don't think we have many grassroots things like that. The country's obviously considered geographically smaller. You could say culturally, it's obviously more mature in many ways. So there's lots of other things. I would say there's a movement over here for the reinstatement of common law, which sounds a little vague. There aren't any sort of direct bodies on it, but there are a lot of people really hacking away at things like this and really trying to unearth the law around here and get back to that. So, but in terms of an organization like League of the South, there aren't any things like the League of the South of England or anything like that. Not that I'm aware of, anyway. I mean, there are patriotic organizations, but they're a little bit hamstrung in many ways. Normally, people have gone to political parties over here, but they've been kind of undermined recently over the last 10 years.
What was your opinion about the National Front? I know they're outlawed now. Only say what you can say to keep yourself from getting in some sort of legal trouble. But what was your opinion about the National Front?
You know, it's interesting. I've got to tell you, I've never voted in an election. You need to know this, right? I would never vote in an election. The only thing I've ever voted in my life is for Brexit, because it was for my people. That's the only. I don't like politics very much, because there's a lot of evidence to suggest that most of the people involved in it are not particularly honourable people. The National Front, as I remember them as a youth in the 70s and the 80s, when they were kind of at their peak, they came across as being a little bit too rowdy to me. But I've got to tell you, I was a complete political ignoramus at the time, and also not interested. There were girls, you know, and things like this to actually do when you're in the team stuff. So, you know, and playing music and doing all sorts of other things. So, frankly, they never really appealed to me. I think in John Tyndall, they had a good communicator, but he often would come across as a little bit too overly forthbearing. There's nothing wrong with the soundness of it. The problem with these things is that they all get cul-de-sac. They get beat off. I mean, for example, over here, there was the British National Party, which was an offshoot of the National Front, which about 12 years ago or so was beginning to make really serious strides and pick up a lot of grassroots support. So what occurred was that the Conservative Party, as far as I'm concerned, I can't really prove this, but they developed a new party called UKIP. And UKIP's job was to basically nullify the growing strength of the nationalist movement under the BNP, and it did just that. It basically split the vote for that and watered it all down, and so it went nowhere. Nigel Farage came to prominence, then he disappeared again, now he's back again. He's, as far as I'm concerned, like most of them, he's just a paid actor. A very good one, but still an actor. You know?
Mm-hmm. May I ask you about another organization there, National Action?
You could. I don't know much about... what do I know about them? Not a great deal.
They were the ones that were outlawed. I misspoke. I'll have to confess. I confused two of your organizations over there. But they caught quite a bit of attention over here from organizations like mine that were very, very hardline and got themselves outlawed. And unless I'm mistaken, there are individuals who are doing long prison sentences for being discovered as members of National Action.
I understand so. Yeah. Yeah, they... I didn't look into it too deeply. I think that they went very quickly into a certain way of dealing with things that was likely to always bring the hammer down on them. But what am I supposed to, are we all supposed to march and run around and do these sorts of things? I mean, these small groups over here are easily destroyed from within. None of them really build up in that way. And that was one of them. I also think some of the things they did were just, they showed a lack of patience really in many ways. But, you know, that sounds haughty. I'm like a middle-aged old gimmer talking about these things. Most of the guys that actually were in that thing were in their 20s, yeah. And their passion and their anger is completely understood. I share that totally. Many people do, although, you know, British people are, they actually are reserved. It takes an awful lot to get people riled up, but with younger people less so. So, you know, they kind of just did things which were just a bit, which were likely to result in the sort of response that they got, unfortunately. Right. But as far as I'm aware, they never committed a violent act. They never did anything. They never destroyed any property, as far as I'm aware. But it was the supposedly outrageous comments, you know. And you could easily say, well, then there's no freedom of speech here. And I would say there isn't. I would agree with that. There is not. You have to be careful about how you go about communicating. You know, Orwell's 1984 looms larger and larger with every passing day over here, because
we're
governed by
these
paranoid
goosebumps with our First Amendment in the Bill of Rights, but at times you wouldn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. But I've got to say, Ike, you're very quiet in the mix. I can barely hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let me make sure my volume's all the way up. You know, one of the other things I was going to mention, you and I are in the same age group. I'm also in my late 50s at this point, my very
great.
Late
50s. Isn't it great being in your late 50s? I'm wondering how it happened. You've no idea how it happened, have you? You're clueless. You won't go, how the hell did this happen? I've no idea.
But there are individuals in my age group in this movement here in this country, more than a few, frankly. Not all boomers are sold out to the system, but by and large, the burning anger comes from the young men and women who don't see the opportunity that we saw before us 30 and 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I guess. It's different over here. I think it's different. I think maybe this whole sort of thing recently about younger people having a go at boomers makes me laugh. I mean, seriously, he's mad. He's completely bonkers. Talk about splitting us up again.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous. There are goofy people in every single generation. These young people, yeah, really? Seriously? I'm supposed to be knocked out by them? I'm not. No, I mean, there are some great ones, but there've been great people all along.
Absolutely.
I would say this. You get born into the era and time and culture that you get born into, and you have to deal with it.
That's right. Well, that is right.
I hate to interrupt you guys. Some good radio here, but that's music for break time. And we're about to be going into the second hour, folks, meaning that Tom Goodrich is going to be joining us. And Paul, thank you so much for coming on tonight. We're just thrilled to have you on, and we hope to have you on again in the near future. So tune in after the break, folks.
Nice meeting you, Jacob, and thank you.
Nice meeting you, Paul.